And we're holding out a page for Aleph and Megillah, about 5 lines from the bottom, still the middle of our spot. The Gemara has been dealing with the 7 Nevi'ahs and how we know each of them was a Nevi'ah, and the 6th on the list was Chulda HaNevi'ah from towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. So now the Gemara is dealing with, we started the question yesterday, when they find the Sefer Torah in the Beis HaMikdash, and we talked about yesterday what exactly it is that was so special about that Sefer Torah. But anyway, the first thing Yeshayahu, the king, wants to know is what's our next step. So he sends a number, so he sends the Kohen Gadol and a few of his ministers to ask Chulda HaNevi'ah. The question is, why is he sending to Chulda rather than to Yirmiyahu, who was already the established Navi at that time? So first we have the Gemara had given an answer that she's a relative of Yirmiyah, so he wouldn't mind, and that Yeshayahu himself wanted to send the people to her because women are more naturally Rahmanistic, and therefore she'd be more likely to daven to Hashem to moderate the Zera. But now, we said also Rav Yochanan gave a different answer. Yirmiyahu was not there. He had gone. Hashem had sent him on a mission to bring back people from the Aseres HaShvatim. So the Gemara says, Manolam da'ahadu. How do we know that in fact he was successful and he did bring them back? And by the way, there are different opinions how many of them he brought back. There are in fact, now we have, there's a Gemara in Erchin that implies that during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, they had Yovel. In effect, because the Mishnah describes over there, Takana, that Hillel HaZaken, who of course lived in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, had to do connected concerning Bote Orichoyim, Yavadin, in Parshas Bahar, that if a person sells a house in a walled city, they have 1 year to buy it back, and if not, then that's it, it's a goner, and they never get it back, not even in Yovel, and Hillel had to make a Takana in that connection. That concept of Bote Orichoyim applies only when the Yovel is in effect. And for the Yovel to be in effect, most of the Jewish people have to be living in Eretz Yisrael. So does that mean that in Hillel's times, Yovel was actually literally in effect, which would mean then that Yirmiyahu brought back a substantial number of the Aseres HaShvatim, maybe even the majority of them. There are some Rishonim who learn like that. Others learn that maybe it wasn't the majority, but there were enough of them that there were, in fact, members of all 12 Shvatim there. Elsewhere points out, there's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that brings an opinion of Rabbi Akiva, Aseres HaShvatim Einan Asidin Lachzer, that the Aseres HaShvatim are never going to return. Now, what do you mean never going to return? We have many nevuos about how there's going to be all 12 Shvatim at that time. So one point is, because the ones who remained behind in Galus, who didn't come back with Yirmiyahu, who assimilated among the Goyim, they don't need to return. We don't need them in order to have a full complement of all 12 Shvatim, because Yirmiyahu brought enough of them back that now we have among us members of all the Shvatim. The Gemara, by the way, criticizes that opinion. Shavkei Rav Akiva l'chassiduse, what happened to Rav Akiva's chassidus, that he's always sticking up for Jewish people, and all of a sudden here he's writing a whole bunch of them off, whatever. When we get to Masechta Sanhedrin, Ves Hashem, we'll talk about that. But anyway, so Menolam Da'ahad, how do we know that Yirmiyahu was successful, and he did in fact bring back many people from the Aseres HaShvatim? So Dichtiv, you have a Pasuk in Yechezkel. Yechezkel began his nevuos a few years before before Churban Bayis Rishon. He was a younger contemporary of Yirmiyahu. So he says in nevuah, "Ki amocher el amimko lo yoshu." The seller is never going to return to what he sold. Meaning, in other words, he's saying that Yovel is going to go out of effect. So like this, in other words, a person sells his field, at least he has hope that he's going to again see his field because Yovel will come in and again he'll get it back. Yechezkel was saying, Yovel is going to be bottled because everybody's going to be, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed and everybody's going to be going into Golus. So don't think that you're ever going to, if you sell your field, don't think you're going to see it again. So what do you mean? Efshur did Yovel bottle who? Now, if the Yovel was already bottled, because now, ever since the Sancheirev and his predecessors had begun taking the Aseres HaShvatim into Golus, which was some 150 years before Yechezkel was saying this Nevuah, once you had certain Shvatim are missing from Eretz Yisrael, then Yovel goes out of effect. So if Yovel is already bottled from long before, the Novi Misnaba Olshis bottle, how is the Navi saying a Nevuah on it that it's going to cease? Marsha explains, if there's no Yovel, then already he's not returning. So if there's going to be Yovel, then fine. The Pasuk is saying, you would expect that you're going to come back to your field in Yovel, and therefore you don't feel bad, but like this, don't bother. Anyway, you shouldn't be so sad about it. For a different reason, everybody's going to be going into Golos, and you haven't really lost that much anyway. But that implies that Yovel was in effect in Yechezkel's times. How could that be? Elam Lamachet Zidon Yumiya, that teaches us that Yumiya, in fact, did return many people from the Aseret HaShvatim to Eretz Yisrael, but Yoshiyah ben Amon Molech Aleihem, and that Yoshiyahu ruled over them. So therefore, they had people of all 12 Shvatim, maybe even a majority of all 12 Shvatim back in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Yovel went back into effect. Rashi points out, it doesn't mean there was, now what happened was, the actual year when they found that Sefer Torah, which was Yoshio's 18th year, was that last Yovel before the Churban. After that, there were only another 36 years until the Churban, so therefore they never had an opportunity for another Yovel, but there was that one last Yovel, and therefore Yechezkel is saying, don't think there's going to be another one before the Churban and the Golos. Anyway, so that means, so there was that last Yovel. By the way, when Sefer Yechezkel begins, Vayhi b'shloshim shana, in the 30th year, Rashi brings over there, it means the 30th year since all these events. It means the 30th year since they had found that Sefer Torah, and since they started recounting Yovels. So, Menolon, how do we know that Yoshiyahu ruled over them? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, now you have like this, on the second day of Pesach, we had a Haftarah that was taken from near the end of Melachim Beis. It was two segments of Melachim Beis Perek Chof Gim. We have the first segment that ran to 9 Pesukim that describes after they found that Sefer Torah, and Yoshiyahu wants to start a massive Tshuva movement, so he gathers everybody together, reads them to them from the Torah, makes them swear that they're going to follow the Torah, and it goes through in the first few Pesukim over there describing how he got rid of all the Avodah Zarah that was in the Beis Mikdash in Yerushalayim. Then you have a part which is left out of the Haftarah, which continues how he continued working on this throughout the whole Eretz Yisrael. That's the Pesukim that the Gemara is going to quote over here, comes from that middle part. Then you have a last part that's appended there to the Haftarah, where he tells everybody to celebrate Pesach, and they had a grand Pesach celebration of the lights that they hadn't had since the times of the Shoftim. Anyway. So the Pasuk says, Yichtiv, at one point, it describes over there, Yoshiyahu goes to Beis El, where many years earlier, Yeravam had had one of his Egle HaZahav had been over there. By Yoimer, so he says, Mohatsiyun Allah's Asher Ani Roy. What is this grave that I see over there? Now, the Pesukim describe over there, he destroyed the Mizbeach that Yeravam had built over there for the Egel HaZahav, he destroyed any vestiges of Avodah Zarah that were in the area, and he took like this, there were people buried in a cemetery near there, because they wanted to be buried close to their Getchka, he had all those graves opened up, and took out the bones and burnt them on the Mizbeachs as a final punishment for them for what they did during their lifetime. Now, at one point, he sees a grave, and wonders what? It was a kapara for them, yeah. So then he sees a strange grave. Rashi brings on the pasuk that actually Udiu and Sefer Malachim have a whole story over there where a Navi, a genuine Navi, had been sent by Hashem to Beis El to warn Yeravam to stop worshipping Avodah Zarah. And there's a whole story over there how this Navi eventually himself disobeyed Hashem and was killed by a lion and was buried in Beis El over there together with a false Navi. In one grave, this false Navi says, bury the true Navi together with me, because this Navi, the true Navi, Ido his name was, has said a Nevuah that one day all these graves are going to be opened up and then the people are going to be taken out and then their bodies are going to be burnt, their bones are going to be burnt by Yoshiyahu, and I don't want that to happen to me. So now all of a sudden Yoshiyahu sees a grave, but actually brings over there from a medrash. He sees on one side of it there are thorns growing, and on the other side, beautiful flowers. So he realizes there's something strange about this. And by Yomru Elav Anshei here, the people of the city tell him, HaKever Isha Lekim HaShabom Yehuda, this is the grave of the man of Hashem, of Novi, who came from Yehuda, by Yikra, said, Vorom Elah, Asher Asi Salam Mizbeach, Beisel, and he had said, 300 years earlier, he had said in Nebuah about all these things that you just did on this Mizbeach and Beisel, he predicted 300 years ago that all this is going to happen. So, v'chimat tiver shel Yoshiyahu mizbeach Beisel. What is Yoshiyahu doing in Beisel? Beisel had most of the time belonged to Malchi Yisrael. After all, otherwise Yeravam couldn't have set up his Egel Azal with it. Elam alamet Yumiya hechziram. Thus we learn that Yumiya brought back people from the Aseret HaShvatim, but Yoshiyahu molach aleihem, and Yoshiyahu ruled over them, and therefore now he has the ability to go to Beis El and destroy the Avodah Zarah and act like it's his territory, because it is his territory now. Marsha points out, in fact, you have other psukim earlier in that same section that also describe him doing things in Beis El. The Gemara doesn't bring those psukim, because fine, you could say even though it wasn't in his jurisdiction, he went there anyway to destroy whatever Avodah Zarah he can find. Because it is Eretz Yisrael, after all. But now when he's asking, and they're able to tell him of what happened here hundreds of years ago, that means these are descendants of the people who were taken into Golos from there, who now, they have a family tradition of what actually happened over there, and they're able to tell him all the details. That implies that they themselves, that there are actual people who are descended from the people who had been taken into Golos 100 years earlier by Sennacherib, and now they're able, their descendants are now able to tell Yoshiyahu what happened. Okay, Rav Nachman Yitzchok Alamehacha, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says you have another pasuk that also shows this point that Yoshiyahu ruled over the Aseret HaShvatim. The Navi Hoshea is describing, this is 100 to 150 or so years earlier, he's describing about how Malchus Yisrael is good as Tomei, and they're going to be destroyed because of Yerovam's Egle Hazav and other Averis they're doing. Then he says, Gam Yehuda Shos Kotzer Loch, but also Yehuda is going to have Kotzer, where Rashi explains, Kotzer means power and strength. Literally, the word kotzer means harvest. Sometimes in Tanakh, it also means branches. Like the metaphor is of a tree that's producing strong, beautiful branches. So Yehuda is going to flourish and grow in strength. Loch for you, Malchus Yisrael, Beshuvi Shvus Ami, when I bring back the captivity of my people. So in other words, the Navi is saying that there's going to come a point when those captives of the Aseret HaShvatim are going to be brought back, and Yehuda is going to rule over them and have power over them, which is what happened with Yoshiyahu. Okay, so that covers Choda. Now, the last Nevi'ah on the list was Esther. How do we know that she was a Nevi'ah? Dichtib, by Hibayim HaShlishi, Baturvash Esther Malchus, on the third day, when she's coming to meet Achashverosh, she dressed herself in Malchus. Now, if it just means royal robes, Malchus, big day Malchus, me by the way, it should say that she wore royal clothing. The Omer of Elazar, Omer of Panina, Melamed Shalavashta Ruach HaKodesh. What it really means is that she was clothed with Ruach HaKodesh, which is the Malchus of Hashem. So, in particular, Marshall points out, Malchus is the last of the 10 spheres, and Ruach HaKodesh comes from it to a person. And where do we see that the word lovash can be used of Ruach HaKodesh? Ksivach abaturash esther Malchus, uchtivas number Ruach lovshah esamaseh. We have a passage in Divrei HaYomim, we say it in V'yitn L'chan, Matzah Shabbos. At one point, David, during the time when David is hiding out from Shaul, at one point, a whole contingent of people, led by Amasai, come to join him, and David asks, are you on my side, or are you coming to betray me to Shaul? And the Ruach Lov Shas Amasai, a spirit, a desire to be on David's side, and clothed Amasai, and he said the pasuk that he says over there, Shalom, Shalom, Bechol, Shalom, Lo Ezrecha. So the point is that we see now Amasai wasn't a Navi, he's not listed among the Nevi'im, but nonetheless we see that a Ruach can be associated with Levisha, and therefore Vatovash Esther Malchus means that she was enclosed with a spirit, what spirit? Of Nevuah. So we see that she was a Nevi. A different point the Rishami makes is also, she wrote Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther couldn't have been included among Kisvei HaKodesh unless its author was a Navi or a Nevi'ah, and therefore since she wrote it, we see also that she had to be a Nevi. Up until that point, the pasuk describes everything. He came with a whole group of people from Shevet Binyamin, who you would expect are Shaul's people. So therefore, David comes out. The previous pasuk says that David comes out to see them, and he says, if you want to join me and be on my side, then good, I'm happy to have you. But if not, if you're coming to betray me to Shaul, and he says, Yeh Hashem alakeinu avaseinu v'yoychak, then Hashem should see what's going on over here and stick up for me, and then Beruach lov shasam alzai. And then by Kablam David, by Yitnim Berosh Agdur, David accepted them and made them leaders of his band of troops over there. Continuing on the topic of, now, among the Nevi'ahs, we said are Devorah and Choda, so the Gemara points out something that they have in common. But Amar Rav Nachman, lo yo'a yuhara l'noshim. Yuhara is not appropriate for women. Now, normally, yuhara means gaiva, means like holding yourself too high. Rashi actually says that it means chashivos, that it just means an importance, to have an important position. We see sometimes that doesn't suit women well. As we have, for example, Tauti Noshi Nevi'osim Hudahavian Yehiroin, we see that there were two Nevi'os who were Yahir, who acted in a proud, overbearing way, or just in a hush of a way, the Sanyan Shmaihu, and they have disgusting names. Chodeshma Ziburta, Vachodeshma Kalkushta. One is named a bee. Devorah means a bee, which is a not very nice creature. And the other one, Choda, means a weasel, which is also a not very nice creature. So in other words, Marsha explains, the point is, they should have taken into consideration their names have such ugly connotations, that alone should give them an idea to act with a little more humility. But they didn't. Instead, they acted in a very overbearing way towards the men that they were dealing with. The Ziburta Psibba, what do we have about the B, about Devorah? She sent a message to call Barak to tell him that that he needs to take people from Shevet Zvulun and Shevet Naphtali and go to war against Yisra. Now, instead of she could have gone to him, instead she acted in this Yehirus way and summoned him to come to her. And the Kaukushta Ksivba, what about the Kaukushta, the weasel, Chulda? The Pasuk says, when the Kohen Gadol and all those ministers came, having been sent by Yeshayahu to find out what's the Nevuah from Hashem, she tells them, Imru la isha shashalach eschem elai, she says, say to the man who sent you to me, v'loi ka'amru lahu imru la melech. She doesn't say to the king. So she doesn't show him the proper derech eretz. So we see that they acted in this yehirustik. They consider themselves too chashuv, basically, the Gemara is saying. Okay. More about Chulda. Omer of Nachman, Omer Rav, Chulda hanaviyah b'nei bonav shal Yeshua. She was a descendant of Yeshua. And how do we know that? Siv hocha ben charfas. Now, when the Pasuk introduces her, it says that her name was Chulda hanaviyah, the wife of Shalom ben Tikva ben charfas. Now, the word charfas is similar to the word cheres. By Yeshua, when he passed away, he was buried in the territory that he had been given to him as his nachla, the Simnas Serach, Uchtiv Cheres. In one place it calls it Simnas Serach, in another place it calls it Timnas Cheres. So therefore, the Gemara is saying that there's a connection between cheres, the name of the place, and charfas, the name of her husband's grandfather. Now, the question is, that says that her husband maybe is descended from Yeshua. Where does that say anything about her? Rashi says, since the context of the Pasuk is talking about her, then we have to understand that this Ben Charfas is actually telling us something about who he is. Marsha adds the point, because it's one thing, fine, many times in Tanakh, a woman will be identified by her husband's name. That's a normal enough thing. But there's no reason to. Her husband himself was a prominent person. The Pasuk describes him as Shomer Abgadim. He was the keeper of the royal wardrobe. So he himself is prominent enough. You don't need to mention his father and his grandfather. So why is it mentioning that? Is because the Gemara is explaining that it actually tells us something about Chulda rather than just to tell us her husband's yichus. So therefore it tells us that she herself was descended from Yeshua. Now, of course, it could be her husband is also, especially back then, it was more common. People tended to marry relatively close relatives. So maybe her husband was also, but in any case, the point is that she was. The Gemara says, Eisfer of Enas Sava Lord of Nachman. But Rab Enas Sava asked Rab Nachman, Ba'ami Lord of Bavira Sava Lord of Nachman, or others say it's Rab Bavira Sava who asked Rab Nachman. A Braisa says, Ches Nevi'im, Behem Koinim Yotsu Me Rochav Azoina. Rochav Azoina, from the beginning of Sefer Yeshua, the eight Nevi'im who were all Koinim descended from her, the Eruhain, Neria, Boruch, Sroya, Umachseya, Yumia, Pilkia, Hanamel, Vashalom. These are four pairs of fathers and sons. So Yumia is the son of Chilkia, Hanamel is the son of Shalom, Boruch, is the son of Neria, and Sroya is the son of Machseya. And all eight of them were Nevi. And the Gemara is going to establish soon how we know that all of them were Nevi. I don't know if the Gemara is going to get back to that. Wait. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm asking, Chulda Anaviyah, Mibnei Bonei Asher Rochav Azoina Hoysa. And Rabbi Yehuda says there's a ninth one on the list. Chulda Anaviyah is also descended from Rochav Azoina. And we know that Sivhacha ben Tikva, because in the yichus of her husband, again, like Rashi and Marsha said, it's not just the yichus of her husband, it's referring to her own yichus. It says his father's name was Tikva, uchtivasnas Tikva schut hashoni azeh. When Rochav helped the two meraglim escape over there, she used a rope to let them out to lower them out the window outside the walls of Yerichai, and then they tell her, you tie this red string in the window and that'll be our sign, so we'll know which house is yours, so we'll know not to attack the people in your house when we conquer Yerichai. So the word tikva is similar to the word tikvas, as in that red string. So therefore that establishes a connection between Chulda and Rochav. Anyway, so she's descended from Rochav, not from Yeshua. Omale, so Rab Nachman answers him, Eina Sava, old Eina, which we said, that was his name, Rab Eina Sava, old Rab Eina. But Amrila, others say that he told him, Pasya Uchman, black paling. Now, why would he call him that? So, But Rashi actually elsewhere explains, Rashi in Avodah Zarah, that explains that Talmidei Chachamim, because they're so fatifed in learning, sometimes they neglect their appearance. Like they don't take care to wash their clothes as often as they should or whatever. So therefore, when he's calling him Pasi Uchma, it's actually meant as a compliment. It sounds like an insult, calling him a black Kaili, but it's really a compliment. You're a Talmid Chacham who fatifs so much in learning that you neglect your appearance. Marsha points out also you have the famous story in the Sefer Tainis, we'll get to it next after Megillah, Bez Hashem, where Rabbi Yeshua is not so attractive looking, and the emperor's daughter asks him Chochma before Ordo B'Klim Mechor, and he tells her that people who are not so attractive sometimes make the greater Talmid Chachamim. So therefore, in a similar sense, Rabbi Nachman is using that expression to the Ein Sava. Anyway, it tells him, between me and you, we can establish the matter. In other words, each of us has half the story. What happened was Rachav became a Giyoris, Vinasva Yeshua, and Yeshua married her, and therefore every descendant of Rachav is also a descendant of Yeshua. Tosfos actually deals with the question. It's not so simple. Rachav is a Knanis. Are you allowed the Klal to accept any of the Knanim as Gerim? What happened to, fine, Lois Chayef on the Shama doesn't apply to her because they made her a promise, but accepting them as Gerim? So first Tosfos says that maybe she wasn't from actually one of the seven nations of Canaan. Maybe she was from some other nation and she had settled in Eretz. So therefore it wouldn't apply. But also Tosfos says that maybe the Isur of intermarrying with them even after they become Gerim, maybe that only applies after the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael. But Tosfos doesn't like that answer. Elsewhere in Shas, Tosfos discusses that possibility and then says maybe it's a possibility. But Tosfos' primary answer over here is that she was actually from a different nation. So that's what we're saying. Yeshua's wife was Rahab. Up until that point, did he have a wife? We don't know. I mean, by the time they entered Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua was 82 years old. You would think he must have been married at some point, but it doesn't say one way or the other. Anyway. The Gemara asks, "Me havel a boni li Yeshua?" Okay, but did Yeshua have any sons? V'aksiv, when the pasuk lists Yeshua's yichus in Divrei Yomim, it lists from Ephraim all the way down, generation after generation, and it finishes off noin v'noi Yeshua v'noi. So it finishes off with Yeshua and stops there, implying that Yeshua didn't have any sons, otherwise they'd be listed. The answer is boni li havelay. You're right; he didn't have any sons. V'av bin sahavelay. He did have daughters. We learned earlier in this Masechta that at one point there was a night over there where they didn't bring the Oren back to the Machna while they were busy with the siege of Yericho. They were supposed to bring the Oren back every day, and they didn't. And the din is, the Gemara explains in Erevin, when the Oren is not in its place, then people are also the Tashmish Amita. So therefore, Yeshua interfered with people's Tashmish Amita for one night, and therefore, because of that, is why he wasn't Zoicha to have any sons. So it's kind of Midah Kenegan Midah. He interfered with that, and therefore he didn't have the chance to do the mitzvah of Pruvu. But anyway, the point is he had daughters, and eventually one of those daughters, or the daughter's daughter, or whatever, married a Kohen, and all these eight Nevi'im who were Kohenim descended from them. Or nine, according to the Yehudim. But you want to ask, Bishlema Inum with Farshi. By the way, I should mention, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, that his father has a long, long explanation, bringing in all kinds of things of Kabbalah, about this whole piece of Gemara. Rachav represents Bina, and at first she's Bina of Klippa, and later on when she becomes a Giyoris, then she transforms herself into Bina of Kedusha, and Bina has to do with the number 8, and he goes on and on and explains various things that the Gemara says over here about Rachav in the light of all of that. Bina, Rachav has to do with Bina, in the sense that Bina is Rachav Vesanohar, and he goes on and on for several pages explaining all this. Okay, the Gemara asks, Bishlema Inu Mufarshi. Now, of these 8 people we listed, 4 of them we know, it says clearly in the Pesukim that they were Nevi'im. Yirmiyahu, obviously. Hanamel, you have in Yirmiyahu, at one point, Yirmiyah says that Hanamel had a Nevuah from Hashem, that he should come to Yirmiyah and ask him to buy a field. We read the beginning of the story as that Torah, Parshas Bahar. Baruch was Yirmiyah's Talmud, and in general, the Talmud of a Nabi himself becomes a Nabi. Although, mind you, actually, there is a Medrash that says, based on Pesukim and Yirmiyah, at one point, Pesuk describes that Baruch was complaining about what's happening to him, and Rashi brings on the Pesukim over there, based on a Medrash, that Baruch was complaining, how come it is that the Talmudim of all the Nevi'im before me always became Nevi'im themselves, and I haven't been Zoicha to Nevuah? And Hashem tells him, basically, the Churban is coming, it's not a time for Nevuah for the Jewish people anymore. So according to that, Baruch did not actually end up becoming a Navi, but nevertheless, Rashi is understanding that at least the fact is he wrote Yirmiyah's Nevuah, so at least that makes him a semi-Navi, basically. And as far as Suraya, also you have a pasuk that describes over there that Yumiya tells Soraya to write down a certain nevuah of his and throw it into the river over there in Babel as a simon that one day Babel is going to be destroyed when Hashem decides. So therefore, also he's a Navi, or at least the next thing to a Navi. Ella, Avo Avasayu Manolon. But where are we getting that their respective fathers, that Hilkiah and Neriah and Machseim and Shalom, where are we getting that they're new? And the answer is Kedaullah. The Omar Ullah, because Ullah says here is a general rule. Kol Mokam Shashmoy Vashem Avois of Benevius, whenever a Navi is identified by his father's name, be a Duashu Navi Ben Navi. Then it means not only he's a Navi, but his father is a Navi as well. Now, his father is not necessarily one of the 48 Nevi'im that we mentioned before, because the Nevuah wasn't necessarily Ladurtis, and therefore it wasn't written down, but nevertheless his father was a Navi. The point is, Marsha says, a Navi himself is a prominent person. So we don't need to identify him by his father's name, as if like without that we wouldn't know who he is. So therefore, if it mentions his father's name, it means that his father is like him and is also a Navi. Shmoy v'loy shemov, if it mentions the Navi's name, without his father, be a Joshu Navi v'loy ben Navi. Then you know, he himself is a Navi, but his father is not. Similarly, when you have a person, or particularly a Navi, where it mentions the name of the city, then good, you know he comes from that city. But if it says his name and doesn't say his father, it doesn't say his city, then you know that he comes from Yerushalayim. In fact, there's a pasuk that calls Yerushalayim Gei Chizoyin, the Valley of Nevuah, and some of the Mefoshim on the pasuk explain over there that it means it's the city that's most uniquely suited to Nevuah. So more often than not, you're going to have Nevi'im that come from there. Marsha says, you know, we have in Kapitel Pei Zayin, which we say before benching on Shabbos and Yom Tov, when we have the Psukim over there, Nichbodis Meduba Bach Ir HaLekim Sela, Az Kirahab Uvavel Yoda Hineflashes, etc. Ulatsiyan Yoma Ishvi Ishvi Adbas, and Marsha explains over here, in other words, the Ir HaLekim is the place of Nevuah, and therefore we're talking about Nichbodis, about honorable things, that great honorable Nevi'im came from you. Meanwhile, you have As Girahabul Vagal, you might have an individual person, might have been an individual prominent person, might be born in Bavel or Pleshes or what have you. Ulafsiya, but regarding Tsiya and regarding Yerushalayim, Ish the Ish, Yuladba, whether a person is explicitly named as being from Yerushalayim or not, then you know he comes from Yerushalayim. Vahu Yechoninahu Elyon, because Hashem establishes Yerushalayim by setting up his Shechin. So therefore, that fits with this Gemara over here, that when we don't have a Novi's city identified, then it means he's from Yerushalayim. But Masnisa Tana, in a Braisa, we learn a related point. Kolshe Mice of Struman or Mice of Voice of Struman. Whenever you have a person, you don't know anything about what he did, and you don't know anything about what his ancestors did, or Parat Machar Pasiv Be'echadam L'Shvach, and then the Torah tells us something, the Pasiv tells us something praiseworthy about one of them. Kigoin, here's an example, the Novi Tzfanya, one of the Treyoser, begins, Dvar Hashem Ashahoya El Tzfanya Ben Kushi Ben Dalya Ben Amalya Ben Chizkiya. V'yadushu Tzadik Ben Tzadik. Since we know, of course, that Tzfanya was a Tzadik, because he's a Novi, then you know that all the other four ancestors of his that are listed are Tzadikim as well. Eben Ezra on the Pasuk says over there, maybe the Chizkiya of this Pasuk is the same as Chizkiya HaMelech. Whether it is or not, we know that Chizkiya and all the other ones listed are Tzadikim, since they're mentioned together with Tzfanya, who is known to be a Tzadik. By the way, when we were talking before about Yumiya and Chulda, the Medrash mentions that all three of them lived in the same period, and all three of them were saying Nevuah in the same period. Yumiyahu to the men in the street, Chulda to the women, and Tzfanya in the Bate Medrash. Anyway, V'chol Shemais of Struman, or Mais Avos of Struman, or Pora, L'chah Kosev, or the Gir said, the printed Gemara should Pora, L'chah Kosev, Be'echan Mem L'gnai, and vice versa, when you have a group of people where we don't know anything about them, but then the Torah mentions someplace in that family tree, one of them who acted badly, Kigoin, for example, when you have a Vayhi B'chodesh HaShvi in the seventh month in Tishrei, the Tishrei after the Churban, Boy Shmo ben Nisanya ben Nishoma Mizera Amalofa. So Shmo ben Nisanya came and assassinated Gedalia, and that's why we fast some Gedalia. So we know, of course, that Yishmo was a no goodnik. So it means that all his ancestors mentioned in the pasuk are also no goodniks. So when it says Mizera Amalofa, by the way, it interjects Asher Hevi Mizera Amalofa. Mizera Amalofa, we would usually translate, it means he was from the royal family. But the point is that the parenthesis of it here is saying not that he was from a royal family. He's called Mizera HaMalucha because he and his ancestors worshipped Moloch, and therefore they're called Mizera. As we have in this week's parasha, or Mizera Cholisit and Lahavil HaMoloch, and therefore they're called Mizera HaMalucha. You actually have, there's a family tree mentioned in Divrei Hayomim that describes a family tree descended from a brother, from a son. You have a son of Peretz, or a son of Chetzren, whatever, a son of Chetzren, which is the grandson of Yehuda. There's a fellow over there named Yerachmael, who has a whole line of descent coming from him, which the Pesukim describe are there generation after generation, and it winds up the last one on the list is Elishama, and Chazal explained that's the same Elishama as in the list over here. So that was a family for hundreds of years of Rishoyim. So that's why the Gemara doesn't understand. Mizera HaMalucha means they're from the royal family, because they had already diverged from the royal family ultimately descends through Chetzra and to Rom, Aminadav, Nachshon, etc., and not through Yitzirachmael at all. That's, which is why we have to understand that Mizera HaMalucha means that he's from a family that worshipped Moloch. Anyway, the point is, once it says Yishmael, then we know that the other ancestors there in the Sanya and the Shama were Rishoyim as well. Now, obviously, they didn't give all their children. Look, if a person gives all his children to Moloch, his potter from this anyhow, as they gave all their children, there wouldn't be any descent to talk about over here. But they pass them to, then you know what, now that I think of it, I mean, the truth is that Amram holds, and many Rishonim hold, that offering children to Moloch didn't involve burning them anyhow. That's a different kind of Avodah Zarah. So therefore, each of them could have passed all his children through to Moloch, and they still survived the experience. Talking more about the Nevi'im, we mentioned before about the 48 Nevi'im, Omer Rav Nachman, Malachi Zem Mordechai. The last of the Trei also is Malachi. So Rav Nachman says that Malachi is not his real name, it's a nickname from Mordechai. He's called Malachi because he's the second in command to the king, meaning, in other words, therefore he's as important as a Mal. The Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction to that. Baruch ben Neria, Usroya ben Machseya, two of the eight Nevi'im that we mentioned before, the Daniel Ishchamudis, Mordechai Bilshan, Vachaga Ischaria Malachi, Kulam Nisnabu Vishnas Shtayim the Daryavish. All of them said Nevuah in the second year of Daryavish. This is Daryavish the second, the son of Esther and Ahasuerus. In his times, the Nevi'im were telling the Jewish people that we've had this 18-year break. After as we learned before, they started to rebuild the second Mishkan Mikdash, then the enemies of the Jews, the Kusim and everybody else got involved and mastered on them, and the whole project was stopped for many years. Now it comes the second year of Daryavish, it's 7 years since Churban Bayis Rishon, and the Nevi'im are telling them, continue building. Don't even wait for permission from the king. And so the Braisa is giving over here this whole list of Nevi'im who at that time are telling the Jewish people to start the building again. And so, Kachoshiv Mordechai, the Kachoshiv Malachi. So it mentions Mordechai and Malachi separately. So obviously, Malachi is not Mordechai. So the Moses Tubja, you're right, that's a contradiction. We can't say that Malachi is identical with Mordechai. So who was he? The Gemara is still understanding that Malachi is not necessarily his real name. Malachi literally means my messenger. So of course, it could be a name, and the Gemara is going to bring him under Omar that it was, but the Gemara at first is assuming that it's a nickname for a Navi who's also known by another name. So Tanya, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korchoyma, Malachi ze Ezra. Rabbi Yeshua ben Torcha says that Malachi is identical with Ezra. Bachamman, Malachi Shmoy, Bacham say, no, his name is Malachi. It's not a nickname for anybody else. It's his actual name. According to the opinion, Malachi ze Ezra, Maharshal says, because he was a tremendous teacher of Torah, so in that sense, he was like a Malach. As Malachi himself says in his Nevuah, Ki sifse koyin yishmur das v'sori yivachshu mipiyu, ki malach Hashem tzvok esu. That a proper teacher of Torah is like a malach, and therefore Ezra, who was the great teacher of Torah to the whole Jewish people, can be called a malach. But the Chacham is saying that no, his name was Malachi, it's not a nickname for anybody else. Omer of Nachman Reitzvok, Mistabra, Commander Omer Malachi ze Ezra. It's logical to accept the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha that Malachi is identical with Ezra, because we can see a similarity in what they were working to accomplish. In Malachi's Nevuah, you have a section where he deals with the problem of intermarriage. Bogda Yehuda, he says Yehuda, the Jewish people who have returned to Eretz Israel, have been disloyal to Hashem. of Israel, Eva Nest of Israel, and a disgusting thing has been done among the Jewish people of Yerushalayim, and specifically in Yerushalayim, Pichilo Yehuda Kodesh Hashem Asher Oiv, Yehuda has desecrated the holiness of Hashem, which Hashem loves, Uvoal Bas Keil Necher, and he had married and had relations with the daughter of an alien god, meaning in other words, Goyim, who worship Avodah Zarah, and their daughters are considered like the, as if they were the daughters of the Geshkes. So in other words, he's talking about there's a problem of intermarriage over there. Some of them, of course, should punctuate the pasuk a little differently. Tichilo Yehuda Kodesh Hashem, that they desecrated the holiness of Hashem, Asher Ohe Vavoa Bas Keil Necher, that they loved and have married Goyish or women. Why were they doing that, by the way? I mean, there's always a taiva for it, but the Medrash says actually that when they came to Eretz Yisrael, it was a very, very hard trip from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. The women in particular, the Jewish women, became very unattractive as a result of the hardships of the road. So now their husbands aren't unattractive to them anymore. Meanwhile, they see local, beautiful, goyish girls, and therefore they want to marry them. In addition, they hadn't divorced. Some of them had divorced their wives. Some of them hadn't. You know, Malachi goes on to criticize both groups. Yeah. Anyway, the point is that we see that a major concern in Malachi is this issue of intermarriage, which you don't find the other Nevi'im of that time dealing with. We have the divorce from that time of Chagai and of Zechariah, who we just said they all said Nevi'ah at that time, but neither of them is dealing with this issue. Who's the one who actually took steps to remove the goyish wives from the Jewish people? Ezra. Dichtiv, as you have, when Ezra comes to Eretz Yisrael and finds out what's going on, so he calls everybody together, Vayan Shchanya ben Yechiel from Bnei Elam, Vayomer LeEzra, Shchanya ben Yechiel from the sons of Elam spoke up and said to Ezra, Anachnu Mo'alnim Elekenu, yes, we have been disloyal to Hashem, Vanoshiv Nochrius Me'amei Oretz, and we've taken Goyish of wives, and now we should do something about it. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that Shchanya himself was not one of the ones who had done this, but he says, collectively, we have, in order not to be embarrassed in public, the people who actually have. So like he's taking on himself the guilt rather than expose right there people in public. Later on, the Pesukim describe how they set up Bate Dinim, and they took care of the whole matter within a couple of months. The point is that Ezra was the one who spearheaded it, so that's why Nachman says it's logical to say that Malachi and Ezra are the same person. Malachi is saying Nevuah about it, and Ezra is taking practical steps, and the same person, Ezra, is taking practical steps to do something about it. Some of them did. The pasuk ends off over there of Yeshmehem Noshim by Yasimu Bonim. Some of them had children from these wives as well. And when they divorced the wives, they sent away the children with them also, because the children, of course, are going too. Yeah. An interesting point, by the way, the Sefer Dodeser is showing him, a Sefer on Jewish history, makes an interesting point. Why would they need Bote Dinim for that? And why would it take several months? Everybody who married a Goyish wife agrees to send her away, and that's that. The point is, they have to see. Some of them had undergone a Geirus. We have to see, is the Geirus Kalacha? We have to see. If it was the child conceived before or after the Geirus, that makes a difference. If the husband is a Kohen, then he can't be married to a Geirus anyhow. So therefore, you need a Bote Dinim to carefully investigate each case and see you and then figure out all the details. Okay. Finishing off with the discussion about Abigail and Esther among the Nevi'ahs and Rachel, who we mentioned before, Tana Rabbanan. There were four exceptionally beautiful women in the world. Ve'elohen, Sarah, Rochab, Abigail, Ve'esther. Marsha points out, we don't really have, I mean, we have other women who are described as beautiful in Tanakh as well. Rochel, for example, others who are described as Yifas Toyav, Yifas Mara, but the Chacham of Kabbalah, that these four were exceptionally beautiful. Tosfos points out we should include Chava as well. The Gemara says elsewhere that any other word, that even Sarah compared to Chava is like a monkey compared to a person. The answer is that we're only listing women who were born from a woman. Chava was created from Adam's side, so therefore she's not counted. She's just like a whole different kind of person. Ulamanda Omer Esther Yerak Droikas Hoysa. Now there's an opinion we learned earlier that Esther was actually greenish or sallow in color, and just Chutsho Chesed Moshe Choleh, that Hashem arranged that she had this exceptional gracefulness in everybody's eyes. Afik Esther Vayo Vashti. So according to that, you'd have to delete Esther from this list, and you'd have to put in Vashti instead. The point of that, why would we want to praise Vashti and say what was so great about her beauty? Ion Yaakov points out that makes the Ness all the greater. Now, even though she was one of the most beautiful women who ever lived, nevertheless, Ahasuerus had no qualms about killing her, about getting rid of her, and making room for Esther instead.
Ooh,
Vashti. According to that, we're saying that Vashti was one of the most beautiful women who ever lived. Yeah. Tanan Abonim, we learn in the Braisa, Rocha Bishma Zinsa. Rachav could cause znus just with her name. A person would mention the name Rachav, and it would incite thoughts of znus by him. Yoel b'kol. Yoel could do the same thing with her voice. Abigail b'schirasa. Abigail, just a person would think about her, would remind himself of her, and it would cause thoughts of znus. Michal bas Shaul b'riyasa, and Michal bas Shaul, the wife of David, only when a person saw her. Marashar explains, we actually have a hint to each of these in the Psukim. With Rachav, we have, it calls her Isha Zona Ushma Rachav, implying that just her name, Rachav itself, is all you need. Yoel speaks to Sisera and invites him to stay in her tent, and then the Gemara mentions in a few places that she seduced him in order to get him to sleep so she could kill him. By Abigail, she uses the expression to David, Zacharta Samasecha, implying that as soon as you remember me, you're going to have a title for me. And Michal, we see that Michal was looking out the window when they're bringing the Oren Kodesh to Yerushalayim, and Michal was looking out the window over there. It's an Aftarah, a Parshas Shmini, and why she, and then she came out to greet him when he came home. Why didn't she go out into the street to watch? Because she knew if she goes out into the street, then it's going to cause everybody to have thoughts of Znus, because she's so beautiful. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, so Rabbi Yitzchak says, in this connection, Kol Omer Rochav, Rochav Miyad Nikri. A person would even say Rochav's name twice, it would cause him right away to become a Baal Pem. You'd have such a title for it. Omer Rabbi Nachman, so Rabbi Nachman says, what do you mean? I know I'm in a Rochav, Rochav. I can say Rochav, Rochav, and it doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't do anything to me. Omer Le, so Rabbi Yitzchak explains, Ki Amina, Be Yodo Makira Kamina. What I'm talking about is somebody who Yodo Makira, who knows her personally, then that would have such an effect on him. You live 1,000 years after her, so you never knew her. Yodo Makira could be 2 synonyms, that it just means, in other words, that you knew her personally. Rashi and Tainus with us. Gemara also has explained another possibility is that Yoda means somebody who actually had relations with her, like Va'adam Yoda Eskava Ishtai, and knows her on a personal level, then that would have an effect on him, but otherwise not. One thing is, by the way, one thing we see this is the power of Zhapach Shekel and Ahur. The Gemara tells us in Zvochin that by the time the Meraglim came, Rochav had been a zone of 40 years. So we're saying over here, I told him a Rochav, Rochav, Miyad Nikri, and yet she transformed herself, Minak Kotze Ala Kotze, to the point that we said that she married Yoshua and great Nevi'im and Nevi'os descended. So it shows the power of Zhapach. She was the only one who took the message, who internalized the message from Kriyas Yamsuf, it's true. Okay. Yomi and Mashiach Gola, Chabdalib Nissen, Tesla Omer. The Zabla Tova Rebbe at one point got an answer from the Rebbe concerning Chevle Mashiach. The Rebbe said, the Mittel Rebbe in Shari Tshuva said that at this point, Chevle Mashiach are over, and the time is Azman Groma already for good news, Azgralatzi. So there was a Ramosha Langer told the Rebbe in the name of the sin, our Rebbe, in the name of the Zabla Tova Rebbe, that when he'd gotten him this letter, when he'd gotten this answer from the Rebbe about Tamul Chevle Mashiach, he was asking that it shouldn't just be in writing, it should also be that he feels it. And the Rebbe answered in English, it's not just a feeling, it's a reality. Continuing with Halachas of Shabbos, let's see. What's the place in here? You're not allowed to break or cut anything which is not food. When it's food, then you could, even if you're using it for animal food. So for example, you would be allowed to, if it's animal food, meaning not you're using it as animal food, but something that could be animal food. For example, to break off a piece of straw to use as a toothpick. The Alter Rebbe actually says a little differently. Only if the cutting is Maisa Choyl, that's a weekdayish way of doing it, or if you're intending to cut it to size, or if you're cutting it into really small pieces, or something where you make a keli by cutting it open. So for example, that last one includes various kinds of cereal boxes and things like that, various kinds of boxes where you cut them open, especially when you have perforations and you cut them on the perforations, that could be yet another malacha, but you often have the problem of making keli with those. So then such things you can't, but when it's food, or when you're opening it for food, when it's food, then that's different, like he's giving the example over here of breaking off a piece of straw.